What movies are you going to go see this week in Kessel?
Saturday, I am driving home to Evansville.
Ugh.
So, yeah, no kidding.
The following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to another episode of the Mediocre Movie Club. My name is John Kissel, and with me tonight is Shane Settner.
Yo.
And Brian Hartman.
Hey, that's me.
So this trio of Mediocre Movie Club members has gotten together in the past to discuss a past TV show, but we're going to totally flip the script this time and go with some present, currently airing TV shows, namely the HBO one-hour comedy block of Silicon Valley and Veep, and what we're tentatively calling Silicon Veepy. We'll see if we can't beat that.
I don't imagine that'll be hard to do.
Okay.
Wait, that's the name of this episode?
What?
Of this podcast episode?
Yeah.
Sure. Why not?
Hmm.
I don't know. We'll see what we can do.
You sound nonplussed, Brian.
Sounds cute, as Big A would say.
We're not, you know, we're not A-level podcasters here. We're C-level at best.
B on a minus.
Good day. Yeah, be on a good day.
Well, now that we got our audio figured out, I think be up to B again.
We'll see.
So hopefully there's no dishes or
Stranger Things, screams, Winona Ryder freaking out in the background. So, as I said, we're going to be talking about Silicon Valley and Veep. Silicon Valley just had its season premiere on Sunday, whereas Veep aired its second episode of the season. Both are experiencing a bit of a comedy or of a plot reset, with Silicon Valley doing what it usually does every season. The characters experience some success and they experience some failure to go with it, and it's always a bittersweet pill for them. And Veep, more than anything, is experiencing a total reset, where Selena is no longer in office and her various minions and employees have been scattered to the winds. So we're going to talk about Silicon Valley first. Their episode is called Success Failure. Before we get into the details of the season four premiere, your feelings on Silicon Valley in general, pretty positive, you guys? Okay.
It's about the only comedy I usually watch on TV. I just now started watching Veep. I think other than that, it's like the only comedy I've kept up with the past couple of years.
Sure. Brian, Silicon Valley feelings, its place in television landscape?
Yeah, I mean, if I've made it through three full seasons, it's pretty good. I don't appreciate, I feel like so much modern TV TV and movies rely on just like lewd and crude at times, and I find that highly unnecessary, and I think both of these shows fall into that trap a little too often, but it's not enough to stop watching. It's just kind of irritating. I am a The Office,
TGIF, like Step by Step, Full House, Family Matters from the early 90s, that kind of thing.
But that one Fox show where the mom is all sarcastic and the dad is wholly incompetent.
It's 2 in 1 week where that show's come up.
Yeah,
keep going. Anyone's talk about it in some time.
Thanks for letting me finish. With like Parks and Rec and Scrubs, The Simpsons, things like that.
Sure.
Great shows.
Warm-hearted comedies that are
even
no less funny.
I need to watch it. What's the sci-fi cult hit that's the
Rick and Morty?
Yes. Like, I've only seen a few episodes of that, but that's really good. Stuff like that.
I certainly wouldn't classify that as like a warm-hearted show in the sense of like
I didn't
Parks
say
and Rec,
warm-hearted.
But I mean, like, those are the shows that you rattled off.
Right, like, but they're not
people,
those, they're not
everyone loved each other on The Office. Everyone loved each other on Parks and Rec. I wouldn't use that word to describe anyone's relationship to anyone on like Veep, for example.
I guess Selena Myers loved Selena Myers.
Sure. Sure. Certainly true. So, Silicon Valley, Richard's algorithm, the initial purpose, what they had been chasing for three seasons, they were able to execute it, and it bombed. It didn't work. Well, I mean, it worked, but no one liked it. And their new focus is on the video chat. And we see a lot of characters trying not to get sent back to square one, even while the show is kind of pushing them there, where Richard is working on something that's not his own once again, and Ehrlich is fighting with a board to not be sent back to the 10% that he always starts with for all these projects that are done in his incubator. And something that I think Silicon Valley always gets exactly right is like the small tossed off jokes that also reveal a lot of characterization. And I think this premiere, this was especially true with Jared, has these little asides that speak so much to what his life could possibly be like. Like, for example, in the opening where he's in the Uber ride, or the fake Uber ride, and they're all chiming in on the phone, and the VC guy has discovered that this is a ruse, and he's trying to get out of the car, and the child locks are on. And Shane, help me out with the exact wording here if I fuck it up.
All right.
He says the child locks are on because he was taking his friend's great-granddaughter, or he was babysitting his friend's great-granddaughter, implying that Jared is, like, palling around with a 90-year-old woman somewhere.
Yeah, I think you got it. Okay. The delivery could have been, you know.
Sure, yeah, I tripped up on a little bit.
We'll work on that.
And we absolutely will.
And the yes and
sure,
as well.
Sure.
But it's a I didn't even catch it. Like, you laughed so hard at that part and told us what he said. Yeah, that was fantastic. It was so good. It's so subtle. That's the best part. That's the best part of that character is he just deadpans and just completely straight faced.
But he's not boring. He fucks.
He fucks.
There's a lot going on beneath Jared's surface. Like, he learned to paint nails to survive.
Or whoever.
Yes, from living on the streets. Okay. Yeah.
He just says it. It's fantastic. Like, it's not weird at all. And that's how a person like that in normal life would be. Like, yeah. Of course. Why wouldn't I be?
Yeah. Still waters run very deep for Jared. And then another one of these small moments of characterization where Russ Hahnemann is driving away after speaking about all the guys Richard wants to fuck in front of this grade school that his child does not go to, where he's like screaming out Papa Roach from whatever his car is. I mean, of course he is. Of course he is.
Papa Roach is a great choice.
Brian, anything to chime in with on, as far as like the events of the episode? Anything that stuck out to you?
The Hooli CEO, who I have despised up until this episode, where he sends the plane back and forth to China.
This is a very serious assignment.
Yes,
for him and the security chief. They are both talking with each other like there's billions of dollars at stake. They're like about to acquire some giant subsidiary or something, and it's just about whose dick is bigger, his or Triangles of Success guy. I can't remember what his name is.
Jack
something.
Yeah,
and it's like 29 miles difference or something. I don't know. I thought that was really, and he wants to get the average, so we can't just do it once. We have to do it five more times.
He's an engineer. I mean, he doesn't fuck around. He's good with the details.
Just like my child yelled at John Kissel yesterday. Small sample size.
He did. He did yell that. I should have tightened up my statistics. I fell into a very common trap thinking about hot streaks.
Yeah.
And he was right to correct me.
Back in the day,
he got on his whiteboard and demonstrated how what I was saying was statistical nonsense.
Yeah.
It was impressive.
Considering you can't spell it right.
He writes sigmas really well, though.
Excellent sigmas.
Yeah.
Now, back in the day, Bobby and Brian defended the were you guys – didn't spend a hot streak, but you defend in roulette if green or if red comes up like five times in a row, you bet black, right?
I don't know. I mean, I personally play against the board, but I don't go to casinos anymore. But, I mean, the law of large numbers, if you have an infinite number of spins, you'll end up with 50-50. But, you know, you don't have that many numbers in a short period of time.
Statistics are useless for the individual and all that.
Right, you're not, unless you're going to sit and play 1,000 times.
And you should not do that.
The most I've ever sat in front of a roulette table was for 475 times. So, I mean, it was tough to get to that sample size.
I wonder what it is, though. Like, it's probably less. It's way less than 1,000 probably to hit close to 50-50.
So, real-world similarities. I'm not a tech person. I think this is going to be a recurring segment for both of these shows where we, like, pull out recognizable instances from the news or business or whatever. About these very real worlds that have a reputation for being somewhat accurate in their like Twisted Mirror universes. And we might get JR onto the podcast in the future to talk about Silicon Valley. And like, he's a programmer. He might have, he was telling us when we were recording The Wire that he had just had a conversation with someone about dashes or tabs, which is, I feel like, was the crux of a whole episode in Silicon Valley at one point.
Right, it is. That's what, he broke up with his girlfriend because of that.
That's right. Yes, that's right.
That's like, I mean, that's a thing though. Like, you learn, that's like introductory programming, where that's one or two classes and you develop that skill.
Or but as far as like anything to comment in that arena,
I'm trying to think of some.
I got nothing.
Yeah,
I'm not plugged into plugged into Silicon Valley. Like, I have an Expression 2 phone.
There's a podcast called Marketplace Tech. It's like 10 minutes. I think you could invest 10 minutes a day, and you would know a lot about what's going on business wise in Silicon Valley.
Really pressed for time these days, Brian. But I'll see what I can do. I'll see what I can do with that 10 minutes. So, lastly, if there's nothing else plot wise to speak to about Silicon Valley, we'll just go right into favorite moment, a la the Chris Farley Show, in which we talk about a joke in a show and talk about how funny it was, as he did with Paul McCartney and so many other celebrities. That was awesome.
That was, you remember how you recorded the Beatles? That was great.
Remember when you guys played on that roof? That was awesome. So, Brian, you got a favorite moment or scene to call out from this episode of Silicon Valley?
Just the Hooli guy. That was my favorite.
Okay.
I didn't take detailed enough notes. I didn't realize. This was in the swing of things.
Together. This was thrown together very haphazardly. Shane, anything to call out?
Oh. What's your nuts is just having to sit there and stare at the bathroom.
Sure.
That was good.
At various dingles and dongles.
Yeah. I mean, it's not as good as look. I mean, the best part of that was when they brought it back for Action Jack later. And the long-haired guy who lives down.
Yeah. Presumably we'll never see him again. I think that would be the best path that the show could take, is that he's just gone. He disappears.
Yeah. But that guy with the long hair just staring at him as the door shuts slowly. Just both those bathroom scenes.
My favorite character in Silicon Valley is Jared. So the most, one of the moments that stuck out the most to me was his Harry and the Hendersons moment with Richard, where Richard has resigned from the company and he's telling Jared to stick with Piper Chat. And he just gives him a very sad dog look. And Jared has to say, go on, get out of here. He's like an extra 5 seconds away from throwing a rock at him. Told him nobody wants him here anymore.
Good.
He's a great character.
I got one while I'm thinking about it.
Sure.
So when he talks about how he's managed to embed 12-bit color and he wants to show everyone how cool it is.
Yeah.
And it adds, you know, like 12 extra pixels to the side of the video chat, and he's like so proud of it. I think that's like kind of a dorky tech thing. Where you're, because I've done enough design where I'm like, oh yeah, that looks so much better, and then everyone else is just like, what? That makes no difference whatsoever to anyone except for you. I had an appreciation for that.
Yeah, that's something else that Silicon Valley does very well, is it doesn't necessarily try and get the viewer to understand what's happening, because I don't understand many of those words that you just said. I think of bits in context of Nintendos and Super Nintendos and Nintendo 64s. All that's right. My relationship with those. But you get that he is personally impressed for very little effect.
Right.
And it's just such an engineer thing, apparently.
That was good.
Yeah. So Veep had its season 6 premiere 2 weeks ago, and it aired its second episode on Sunday. So we're going to talk about both of those episodes, titled first Omaha and then Library. So similar to Silicon Valley, you guys' background with Veep, Brian, start off with you.
Chelsea and I just wrapped up all the seasons leading up to this one last week. I don't know how long it took us to get through them. A few months. Took a break for a little bit, but wrapped them up.
They are pretty dense. It's not exactly like a binge-watching kind of show, I think.
Especially with kids. It's impossible to binge-watch anything with kids.
Yeah, so. That makes sense.
Preach.
Shane?
I've watched a handful of episodes.
Okay.
That's it.
So you'll fulfill our inexperienced watcher.
Yeah.
We'll be happy to chime in and explain some things.
I like the guy with the kids. Kids.
Should I get Chelsea in on this one? Should I beg so we can have someone ballpark? Else? What?
Is she in that similar ballpark, not knowing the characters?
Oh, no. She probably knows the names better than I do.
All right.
I'm a terrible name person. That's just not a skill I have.
What? Brian, I mean, come on.
You called me Sean for the first 3 years we knew each other.
I am a huge Veep fan. I thought last season, season 5, was the best show on television for 2016. It was just episode after episode where they were topping themselves and topping themselves. And then culminating in like a very daring way that totally blows the show up while also staying very true to the characters and what they deserve in this world. So I have high expectations going into this season. And after 2 episodes, I'm a tiny little bit wary. We talked about this a little bit on the Facebook page amongst our internal group, and I don't know, a little off, perhaps. I mean, Shane, you don't really have a whole lot to compare it against, but Brian, having knocked it out in such a quick fashion, do you feel like there's a demonstrable difference?
Well, so... I'm with you. I can't compare it to anything else because I didn't watch any TV in 2016. But it's one of the better comedies in the last, I don't know, 10, 20 years. Episode 1 was garbage, but episode 2 was, I think, back in the swing of things.
Why do you say that? About the first episode?
Ben and his meeting at Uber, where he talked about where he only had things written down on paper.
He was wearing a suit while they were all wearing jeans and t-shirts.
Right, and he was offending them, and he said the word Oriental and things like that. Like, that was the only good scene from that whole episode that I can remember. I was trying to rewatch it real quick, but I thought everything else was pretty flat.
I think, like, having everyone off in their own worlds is going to be a challenge, just because some of those plots, it'll be pretty amazing if all of those plots are able to stick to the same high level, that everything was, when everything was just in one centralized location. Like maybe they do Selena's post-presidential career fantastically, but maybe like Dan at the TV station, maybe that falls behind. So, and there's also like they never loved each other, as we said earlier, but they like extra hate each other now. The characters are still around each other. Like, Selena's so mean to Gary in these 2 episodes.
Right. I think one of the problems is that as the show has gone on, she has become one of the most dislikable characters on TV. Like, it's, I don't know what redeeming quality she has anymore.
I think, and we're getting away from these 2 episodes, but it's okay. I think in her very brief tenure as president, she did get a lot of stuff done, right? Like you've rewatched the last 2 seasons more recently than I have. Like, I feel like she made some like landmark peace deals and got some legislation passed or something. Like, they mentioned that Laura Montez, the new president.
Who, like the Tibet thing.
Yes. Like, Selena did that, but Montez got credit for it.
Right.
So maybe she can do these big jobs at a certain level, but she's just so consumed with loyalty and familiarity.
No. She lucked into the Tibet thing when she gave the Chinese leader the pen her daughter had got for her.
Okay.
It wasn't
Well, I mean, I imagine that all major, I imagine that all major international agreements are just held together by spit and gum anyways.
I don't know. So, but I think like the redeeming qualities of the especially episode two were Gary, Kent, and I'll just spit this out now, but I think Richard is easily my favorite character.
I think that's a reasonable, defensible position to take. Again, Shane, you've got the least stake and experience with a lot of these characters, having only seen like a fifth of the series or so. And of course, you've seen the two episodes of the season. Like, are there characters that you latch onto that you prefer to see on screen than others?
Are they all?
Because like if you're gonna be sticking with this whole season, like you're not gonna be seeing them really bouncing off each other as they were previously. They're probably
pretty unlikable. I mean, there's it's funny. Everyone's funny. Everyone has their role, but I guess the only person who I'm not aghast with is Dan at this point.
Wow. Okay.
So okay. I mean, that shows you. I mean, I, and the episodes where I saw Amy for the last season,
mm-hmm.
I liked. I guess Richard's fine. Richard's fine.
Pretty great.
But I mean, everything he says is pretty funny. But yes, yeah, so I guess it's Dan and Richard, but the only two people at this point.
Okay, yeah.
Amy's that's pretty unlikable.
That'll right be now. The value. Yes. Her plot with running that campaign in Nevada is I don't
know. Awful. It's terrible.
I'm not a huge fan.
I don't care one ounce.
It kind of seems like that is spiraling now that the whole of the country has seen her candidate's dick. So maybe that will wrap up soon.
Yeah, I mean, I liked her from the other handful of the episodes.
Yes, prior yeah. She had a lot of pretty spectacular blow-ups, like justified, righteous blow-ups earlier in the series. And she's just a very cynical, ultra James Carville type running this campaign.
It's a good analogy.
It's just pretty gross. It's pretty gross. So the first episode, Omaha, you kind of get a sense of where the season might be going with Selena trying to return to the presidency. And then the entire cast in her world, at least, throws as cold of water as possible onto it with her daughter, Catherine, just like breaking down into tears and Gary being unable to hide his horror and the idea of this inspiring so much hatred in Ben that it makes him tell the truth for once. So we're not going to do that. I can't imagine there's any scenario where after such a forceful slap in the face for Selena that this would be a terrible idea for her to run for president, again. I cannot imagine that's where the series goes. So I don't really have any sense of it two episodes in, like if there's going to be an overarching plot or if it's just going to be the characters off in their own worlds, Dan trying to not get destroyed by his co-host, Amy running this campaign, Jonah just fumbling through Congress. Who knows? I'd be totally fine with that because I would 100% agree that the second episode was just as good as anything in the series with Jonah's series of failed dates and the college stuff, which I thought was pretty good jabs at present day college culture. So I'd be totally fine if it turns into a sitcom with minimal plot,
right,
on a continued season long basis. Like I was trying to explain what happened in the last season to Blair with all the complicated constitutional presidential election politics, and after right. The House of Representatives died, I couldn't even make it up anymore. I couldn't even guess. It was just so convoluted and confusing. And the characters admitted as much in the show, like they were just as frustrated with it as surely the country would be if there was such a series of non-results in the presidential election. But I'd be totally fine if everyone just did their own thing and we just watched them.
I don't know. I'd like so Gary and Mike's interaction with Selena. Like, I think those two are funny. When Gary's not being, I don't know, Yeah, his responses to he'll be gone now, but the Veep's ex-husband, whenever he's around, Gary is fantastic. I don't know what he'll turn into now that he's leaving for the second time.
Another character like Jack, the Triangle Man, who I would be fine if we never saw again. I cannot stand that guy. And we're going to talk about real world similarities shortly in Veep, which we have more than in Silicon Valley. But that guy
that we recognize.
You're talking about Andrew, right?
Andrew, yes. I don't think he is not particularly funny, his character. I don't think they give him good lines to say. I think he's just a foil for Selena's team, who all recognize him as a poisonous influence. And it's just so sad whenever Selena gets back with him. But there's a handful of moments in the show where you get like genuine pathos out of the characters. Like the handful of episodes that Shane you watched, one of them was where Selena bumped up a schedule for a military raid, and the result was a guy was on the mission that wouldn't have been if she hadn't bumped it up, and he got his leg blown off. And she was like legitimately disconcerted by that. And that's sad. And this is a cynical show. It's not really a sad show. And that's a swirl of emotions that's hard to contend with. I don't like pathos in this show. I like cynicism. I prefer that.
Right.
And when Andrew's around, it's just, God, this is an abusive relationship.
Yeah, like listening, like watching him try to con his own daughter out of money is not a pleasant experience.
It's really not. TV. Somehow it's just more icky. Pleasant when Selena does it. When Selena's trying to get a nicer office and shaking her head at $79,000, somehow, maybe that's just me, somehow that's just less frustrating.
Well, I think that comes back to like sort of mocking politicians and what they're after and the hypocrisy involved rather than a guy who's just a scumbag dad.
Real world similarities. We could talk about a whole bunch of these, I think. I'm better versed in politics than Silicon Valley. You guys are too. So, like, the corrupt presidential pardons was a big one. I feel like they're really hammering the Hillary Clinton comparison with Selena.
So, my question, had this written down. I don't know who Sherman Tans is, but I also have to say something. Chelsea and I watched the first, how many seasons are we on now?
This is a sixth season.
This is six. Because of the way HBO Now worked on the Amazon Fire Stick, we missed like the last 5 minutes of every episode of the first five seasons.
All right, that's weird.
And it turns out they do a ton of stuff in the last 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we
just cuts off with no credits.
It would say, yeah, because it would turn on autoplay real fast.
Oh.
And so it jumps to the next episode.
Okay, gotcha.
Like you're binge watching. And so we were just like, they'd show the last time on Silicon Valley and it'd show all this stuff that we missed. And we're like, but we watched 25 minutes and missed all the important things.
Yeah, like when the screen splits between the credits and like a final scene. Yeah, they tend to like float around a lot too in there.
Yeah, so we missed all of that for five seasons.
Okay, well, you got an excuse to go back and rewatch the whole thing again.
So I don't know if Sherman Tans was covered at that point, but I have no idea who the guy is.
I think he's new.
Yeah,
is he just like a made up name?
I don't know why I said yeah. I have no fucking idea. yeah, got it right, John.
I don't know exactly when it would have happened because we were with Selena through Inauguration Day when she's no longer in office. But they're backfilling the presidential pardons that presidents always do. And apparently one of hers was a private prison magnate who was found guilty of tax evasion and fraud and other white-collar crimes, which is identical to this guy, Mark Rich, who Bill Clinton pardoned on his way out of office, who fled the country, Roman Polanski style, once he found out he was going to be prosecuted for white-collar crimes, tax evasion, so on and so forth. Hmm. A billionaire who also happened – whose wife stayed in the country and who happened to donate a significant amount of money to the Clinton Library.
Okay.
And, yeah, It's basically that exact scenario. And the way that Andrew is just constantly saying, we can ask him for money, and Selena is saying it as well. Like, she's got Sherman Tans in her pocket. She can build a library with his money. It's fucking gross. It's pretty despicable post-service, post-public service kind of stuff. And then you've also got, like, the college protests, which I don't know if you guys watched that video from, I think it was Yale, maybe? I don't know. There was, like, a protest on a quad there about, I can't even remember, I think it was about Halloween costumes. Where, like, the staff that was, the professor that was sponsoring a dorm had written a letter to the students saying, let's be sensitive or something.
Yeah, I seem to remember the uproar about it.
Yeah. And, like, a student was caught on camera just screaming at someone.
Yeah.
And yeah. I feel like angles were exactly the same as well.
Missouri protests where there's a fucking professor screaming at people.
Yes. It was like, journalists aren't welcome in this square. And unless you're an ally.
Yeah.
Journalist, you're not welcome in this space.
It's my fellow liberals who have nothing better to do than tear everything down around them.
Yeah, and they're standing up for a grown-ass woman played by late 30s June Diane Raphael, who had an affair with Selena's husband. Yeah. And then Selena fired her. And then lastly...
just a good bit to put in to modern TV. I thought that was well done.
I got angry. I'm like, because this happens. This is so realistic. This is what... Right. These are the insane fucking protests and waste of time protests that people are involved in.
And, I mean, Selena is an ex-president, and I think, like, in a culture of punching up where just people in power are always at fault, which isn't, you know, the worst thing in the world, but it also very much denies their
humanity. At fault for what?
Just at fault. You cannot, one cannot reign innocently. If you are at the top, if you have a cumulative power, which people think that Selena does, and we see that she absolutely does not, then people just automatically assume the worst of you. Which, again, of all the problems in the world, not a big one.
Yeah.
But, you know, the show is about her, so it's easy to sympathize with her when she has to bring June Diane Raphael's character back after having sat in a puddle of Andrew's jizz. So, yeah, frustrating. Frustrating series of scenes, but a good way to get her out of Smith College and get her onto the next humiliating event. And then lastly, like the Amy as the lobotomized wife having to stand by, in her own words, having to stand by a male politician who did something really fucking stupid. And you can't just say, I hate this piece of shit and I don't want to have anything to do with it anymore. It's a political arrangement.
I like he's like, can't what just I walk was away. Saying, nothing to do with you at all.
That's just always a sad phenomenon. And a recent documentary from 2016, Wiener, which followed Andrew Wiener's mayoral campaign, a whole bunch of instances of his wife, Huma Abedin, having to stand next to him, being supportive, while you can see the gears grinding in her head. I fucking hate this piece of shit. Anything from the real world that you guys want to call out from these two episodes of Veep?
Not remembering people from college.
Sure.
I have no fucking idea half the people.
That like, shit just goes away.
I'm like, I don't know who that is.
Yeah. Brian, anything before we move on to the Chris Farley show for Veep?
No, I don't think so. I've stopped paying attention to real life politics, so it's gonna be hard to
it's for
the best of my blood pressure.
Not the worst decision in the world.
Yep.
So favorite moments from these two episodes. Jonah, much like Jared, is probably my favorite character on the show, or at least the most reliable generator of laughs. And when he showed up completely hairless on the house floor on C-SPAN, I gasped. Like, it caused a reaction out of me beyond just laughter, which is often so easy for him to for him to generate.
It was a nice little touch to not be able to get his entire to pan up.
And for him to refer to his mom as his stupid mom on the house floor. Very good. It's a great character. Love that, Jonah. He ostensibly, Jonah, has the most power of anyone in the cast. which is depressing. Brian?
I've got three here. One, as a math nerd, Kent is my second favorite character, as everything is purely analytical. I just appreciate most of his lines, where I don't think most people care what he has to say.
Another Jonah. I got to jump in here with another Jonah, with some more Jonah stories. When it is revealed that Kent is now his assistant, Jonah, in talking with Congressman Furlong, who was often the most obscene person on the screen, Jonah forcefully tells Congressman Furlong that working for him is better than sponging up jizz. Right, Kent? And Kent pauses for a very long time.
Because in like real life, that character Kent is actually processing the differences there. Like, that's not...
He's making a pro.
It's not an analogy. Right. It's opportunity cost. It's not. Oh, man. All right. I think Gary, when Selena's daughter announces that they're going to be pregnant, and like Selena is pissed, and Gary in the background is like clapping and giddy. He's so happy for them. I think he was cute in that episode.
He needed a win in these two episodes.
Right. And then my favorite part is they're in the car, and Selena's ex-husband starts playing the voicemails through the Bluetooth. So there's the first one, and then the second one comes on, and it's really long. And afterwards, Richard says, "That was a long one. She must have stopped at a light." Yeah. Someone had said something about how she was sending those things in the car or something. That was great.
You mentioned The Office. Creed, for a while, NBC was putting up his www.creedthoughts, so on and so forth, like the blog that Ryan made up for him.
Right.
HBO briefly, and maybe they kept it going for a while, they also recreated the website that Richard had, Splatnet or whatever it was.
Oh, man.
I never actually read it, but worth checking out.
Search that right now. And he's going to, like, he says he's got to go buy a Splat shirt because that's what his family calls sweatshirts. Yep. Splatnet.net.
I didn't get that joke.
Okay, so. Awesome. Yeah, Shane didn't know his name.
Yeah.
It's totally fine.
I knew his name.
Richard.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess my favorite scene of these two episodes, which I forgot. There's just a bunch of one-liners I really liked. Richard on the plane saying, "Let's get to it." Oh, we're in the air. It's pretty solid. Selena telling the painter to take your crayons and go the fuck home.
A nice cathartic moment.
Yeah, for the end of the episode. I think between two Jonah scenes, Jonah, the women constantly going the wrong way for the bathroom, and such a small touch of him snapping to get the waiter because he would be that guy. When I used to bartend and serve, I would tell people, "I'm like, you can, like, my name is Shane. You can literally call me anything in the world. Raise your hand, do whatever you do, but do not fucking snap or whistle at me. I will not come to your table." And people are like, "I get it. All right, I respect that. I'm like, cool." But also, I just lost my train of thought. Oh, Dan just getting to on the TV show. It takes him 15 seconds of poking Jonah, and he goes off right in air. It's great.
They didn't. I feel like Jonah faking cancer would be a larger plot point in the series. Right? It seemed like they forgot about that in the second episode. It's just par for the course for Jonah. The next week, he's off to allowing his base appetizer or dessert only.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's off of it. All right, fair enough. Okay, I feel like that would be a nice... Or he would need a lobotomized wife for that press conference.
Yeah.
Like he would have to get up and like, "Yeah, fine, I can fake cancer. What do you want? My stupid mom's fault." Okay. Anything else? Silicon Valley or Veep? Silicon VP episode one?
Silicon Valley with the win.
Oh, I would go second episode of Veep, then Silicon Valley, then the premiere of Veep.
I am 100% in agreement with that one.
I'm going to go Silicon Valley, then second episode.
We'll have a straight up contest next week. when we return to discuss episode 2 of the 4th season of Silicon Valley and episode 3 of the 6th season of Veep. This was fun trying out, talking about comedies. We'll see how it goes.
Are we going to play What Are You Watching? What Have You Watched?
No. We'll save that for movie podcasts. We'll keep our segments,
Brian, what are
our
you segments
focused.
Thanks, Shane. I'm glad you mentioned it.
I feel like you need to talk about it.
I do. It's really important, actually. The show The Circle, the movie The Circle is coming out.
Okay.
And I took up the audiobook version of this after I read half of it and I couldn't renew it at the library. So I've been audiobooking the last half. It is awesome. And it is like Facebook / Amazon take over everything. And it is real and it is terrifying. I can't recommend the book enough. And so I want to see the movie. It's good. It's like, it reminds me of a modern 1984. Like people who say 1984 is still practical are kind of absurd. This is like the modern renaissance of that.
I believe I got a C on the AV Club.
So maybe the movie's terrible. The book is the book is terrifying. The reality of it, and it sort of gets into like this, like young kids being willing to just give everything over to the web with no knowledge of the past.
I mean, I have conversations with people my age just as often as I do with people in my parents' generation about how what do I have to hide kind of things. Like, I don't care about spying. I don't have anything to hide. So I would imagine that's pretty widespread as far as, assuming that everything is benign and nothing could ever be used against you. Hence my expression to phone, if I can bring it up twice in one episode.
Nailed it.
The movie's got, it's not like a young adult series or anything, is it? Because like Emma Watson, I believe, is the lead in the movie. And that kind of
no, it's of a not. Young adult it's, series. There's hand jobs and slight descriptions of sex. It's not probably appropriate for young audiences.
Okay.
So.
Good note.
There you go.
Thank you. It's relevant. Relevant to Silicon Valley. It's in the ballpark.
Yeah, it's absolutely. And Veep, because they're getting into politics as well.
So, okay.
There you go. I think full circle. It. Like that,
it'll do us, guys. Like the circle.
Like the circle.
The circle.
Brian, would you full like to know what circle. I'm watching?
Yes, I do, actually. This is like my favorite part of all these podcasts.
Fucking segment creep is what this is.
I just finished up The Young Pope. It's just bizarre. Fantastic and bizarre. I still don't know what to think fully, but I hope it wins awards.
It's hard to imagine that it wouldn't.
And I've been watching Justified.
And I can tell gosh.
It shows.
No, Shane,
I can tell you that Timothy Oliphant did not develop that walk just for.
I still don't know what you're talking about. I think he walks like a normal person.
He walks just like a stiff board.
Yeah.
It's probably because he's just so fucking in shape. It's no extra movement. It's crazy.
He's efficient.
Yeah.
Why swing your arms when you don't have to?
Yeah.
If he does that, which I don't really notice.
A little bit.
I'm caught in the swirl of his eyes.
The show where Seth Bullock warps 150 years into the future and is the same person. It's
very
in
different.
A new location. It's a
very different.
He is character. Very different. But in the new one, he wears a cowboy hat.
All right. Fair enough. I mean, it's just such an iconic character, Seth Bullock. It has to be recreated as many shows as possible.
Are we going to get sci-fi Seth Bullock? That'll probably be my favorite one.
We got horror Seth Bullock. He was in the new zombie series on Netflix with Drew Barrymore. Santa Clarita Diet or something. Oh. Something like that. I don't know.
We had porn industry Seth Bullock.
We did. Just like Seth Bullock to get into porn. Once he put that hand on his wife's lower back, it was opening the floodgates for him. That was just for me. It's a reference just for me.
Okay.
I'm not going to tell you what I've been watching because that's a segment for movie podcasts. That'll do it, I think, for this episode. Yeah. Guys, thanks for joining me tonight. Again, we'll be back next week.
Thanks, John.
It's been a pleasure.
Have a good night.
See ya.